Greetings from Long Island, where every highway is a sunrise. It's time for Dave's Gone By, an hour of comedy, talk, and music brought to you by Total Theater, with your host, Dave Lefkowitz. You've never heard anything like it, so sit back, relax, squeal if you must. Here's the host of Dave's Gone By, Dave!
Tropical hot dog night! Like two flamingos in a fruit fight! Every cover of day, whirling around at night.
Well, there goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to the 172nd edition of Dave's Gone By, here every Sunday night at 11 o'clock on AM 1240 WGBB. And happy Mother's Day it is to all of your moms out there, and to my mom and dead grandmas and aunts and uncles and stuff like that. Well, not uncles. We'll leave the uncles out of this day. But to the moms, happy Mother's Day 2006. And we've got a motherly, loving kind of show for you tonight, including a book, or the author of a book, about the importance of the feminine and the goddess. Now, this is totally not my area, not my kind of thing, but it seems sort of interesting and certainly ties in with the whole mother-woman angle that I wanted to go with today. We'll play a little mother song. And we'll also, let's see, we'll also have a Dave Goes Off segment about a bunch of other stuff. But I really wanted to talk to Tim Ward, who wanted to go and find out why his marriage collapsed and why he had these deep-seated feelings and fears, I guess, about women and where that came from. Now, most of us might go on a psychiatrist's couch, or just might go along and assume it's the women's fault, or just go along and know that it's our fault and yet not really do anything to change that, because, you know, men don't change. But he went somewhere different in investigating what his relationships with women have turned out to be, and how that relates to how women have been treated all over the world for centuries of time. He had also other relationships with women that just did not go well, that just failed, for reasons that he could not figure out. He assumed that he was doing things basically right. He was saying the right things, he was doing the right things, trying to be a good partner, a good gentleman, and it just was not happening, and things that he was doing supposedly out of love, in some ways he was even doing kind of out of rage. So how did he discover this? Well, he went on this pilgrimage, this trek to all these different countries and looking back at their ancient civilizations as well as their modern ones, and trying to say, okay, how did these people treat women and how did they respect the woman, as it were, in the world and culture and in all of us? And it turns out that so many of the ancient cultures not only loved women but worshipped them. It was goddesses as deities. And only more recently have we really gone so male-centric, so phallocentric, if you will. And that one of the things that we've lost as people, and as a Western and Eastern world, is the acceptance and the wonder and the importance of the female in I'm not explaining this the way he will, but you can kind of get where I'm going with this and where he's going to be going with it. And it's kind of interesting, and let's face it, we're in a world that's a little bit out of control, and we love to make war, as we've been doing in all modern times, and maybe that's part of it, and maybe the fact that relationships and divorces are 50 or 60% or whatever they're at. So all of that ties in to what Tim Ward wrote about in Savage Breast, and he's going to talk about it, but not to me, because I'm kind of a, you know, old-fashioned, misogynist-y sometimes kind of a guy. I wanted to give him a really fair shot. I wanted to give him someone who would appreciate his own feminine heck of a lot more than I can. And so Tim Ward is going to be interviewed by Peter Fitzgerald. Now, Peter, as listeners to this show know, is the vice president of Wigglefar, the Woodmere Gay and Lesbian Front and Rear, and he is very, very strong and proud as far as gay issues and the whole homosexual and lesbian lifestyle thing is concerned, and transgender and transistor style. So Peter will be doing the interview a little bit later with Tim Ward about Tim's book, Savage Breast, just perfect for all the women with breasts listening on this Mother's Day to days gone by. And actually, we'll get to it in just a little bit. But a couple of things I've always got to do. I've got to remind you that this program, Dave's Gone By, is a mix of comedy, talk radio, music, interviews, of course, sketches, songs. You never know what's going to happen on the show. And it couldn't be here, A, without you listening, and B, without the support of our sponsors. Hewlett Minuteman Press, The Copy Kings, Performing Arts Insider, The Broadway Bible, and MortgagesRock.com. MortgagesRock.com is one of our more recent sponsors to come into the fold, and they're cool. It's not just for people who need to have mortgages or to take out loans. It's to teach you how to help people who need loans. In other words, you bring them in, and you do some of the paperwork. They'll help you out at MortgagesRock.com, and you'll get the commission. So they teach you how to be a mortgage broker. They're licensed in New York State. They have an office out on the South Shore. Definitely totally on the up and up, and they're doing good things by getting people the loans that they need for college, for home redecoration, for buying a second home. MortgagesRock.com. Check out their website. It will tell you everything, because making money never sounded so good. And speaking of good sounds, got to remind you to listen to Joyce Keller's program. She is the radio psychic and one of the longest-running talk personalities that we've had on WGBB, Joyce Keller. She's on Wednesday nights from 11 to midnight, and she's a good supporter of Dave's Gone By, so give her your attention, please. And we will be attentive to women's and mothers and grandmothers' issues after one or two commercials, and then we'll be here with Peter Fitzgerald and Tim Ward right after this. Okay, listen to me. No, I mean, listen to me on compact disc, where bunches of past episodes of Dave's Gone By are yours to hear over and over again. Comedy sketches like the Baghdad Elections and Handyman Yoni, guests like Neil Sedaka and Karen Grassley, puns, politics, and punchlines, all just $14 a disc, shipping included. Visit davesgoneby.com for all the details, or call 516-295-1511 for me on CD. Dave's Gone By listeners know I love a good play on words, but let me say a good word on plays, my plays, collected in a lovely book called Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World. Comedies that range from strange to deranged, from sad to satirical, fun to read, and unmistakably Dave. Just $20 hardcover, $12 soft, put down that crappy bestseller and pick up some laughs. 516-295-1511 or davesgoneby.com.
Well, hello, Aru. Well,
hi, Peter.
Hi, is this Tim?
It is indeed, Peter. I'm so excited to be talking with you on Dave's show.
Yes, yes, and I thank Dave always for letting me have the mic here, because I just love the shape of a microphone, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm afraid I do.
Now, you've written a book about something that I do not have, and actually do not really, well, I want some of my own, but you've written a book called Savage Breast. And I just want you to tell all our listeners about this interesting book about the feminine side.
That's right. This is about the feminine side of the divine. And, Peter, one of the things that is so weird about our culture here in North America is we've lost sight of the feminine nature of the divinity. You've probably noticed that God is spoken of as a father, sometimes as a son, but he's always this sort of uber-masculine divinity. And I started to wonder, well, what, you know, was this always the case? Did things used to be different? And I discovered that in the past, people used to worship the goddess just as much as the god, and they could worship the feminine divine and just, you know, let loose with that. And I'm wondering, you know, if that's something that resonates with your own experience.
Well, I worship the feminine divine in every John Waters movie he was in, if you know what I'm saying. But, yeah, well, I worship the feminine, of course, but the feminine in men. But as far as this whole divinity kind of thing, what makes you think God was a feminine kind of personage rather than just God?
Well, you know, the thing is, God, whoever he or she is what they are. But we as humans, we have to look at things metaphorically. So we somehow make the divine into our own image. And in the past, people made them in the image of woman, just as much as they make God in the image of man. So if you go back even to the ancient Greeks, they saw the goddess of love in Aphrodite and the goddess of wisdom in Athena and the terrifying aspects of the feminine in Hecate. And in fact, both men and women worship the feminine divine. Sometimes, I should tell you, sometimes to real excess. You know, there was a whole brand of goddess worshippers in Anatolia in Turkey who were so enamored of the feminine divine that the men would actually castrate themselves to make themselves more like the goddess.
Oh,
worshipper in feminine form.
Oh, heavens! No, they would do this? Oh, my God!
They would. In fact, there were festivals to Cybele, even in Rome. The particular goddess was so popular. And in these festivals, you would have men castrating themselves and throwing their organs into a huge and bloody heap in honor of this goddess. Now, to me, that's rather frightening and extreme.
Well, I will say, I remember back in 1964 when they had the Newport Castration Festival, and Bob Dylan would not play there. And I was wondering why, and now I know. That was just, it was not a good festival at all. And just burning all the garbage. I mean, it was bagging up at Woodstock when they left all that stuff behind. And all their garbage and the mud. But, oh, the Newport Castration Festival, how they cleaned that up, I will never, ever know.
Yeah.
All I know is that the barbecue they had, I didn't touch it. I didn't go near it. No way. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's interesting is these sorts of ancient festivals may well have been what led to the whole idea that priests need to be celibate. And that it looks like the robes that priests wear nowadays are actually taken from the robes that goddess the female priestesses to the goddess used to wear in ancient times. So castrating themselves and then becoming later on just plain celibate was one way that men managed to get into the spiritual hierarchy that used to be dominated by women. And, you know, let's face it, men have done a pretty good job at taking over organizations like the Catholic Church and other sort of mainstream churches today.
Why did men feel that they had to do this? Why couldn't they share? Why couldn't they be half woman, half man? Kind of like, you're truly.
That is an absolutely great question. And not only that, but why can't men who are strongly hetero, well, I got to say, like myself, you know, why can't we also see something beautiful and erotic in the divine? Why is it that the closest we have to a sacred feminine is Mary the Virgin Mother? I mean, I think that the divine should be
worshipped
in erotic form, too.
You're leaving out Barbara Streisand.
Okay, you know, well, this is it. I think that you know, some men who are much more in touch with the feminine energy, they've got a far greater appreciation for the wonders of femininity. But man, we guys who are sort of stuck in this macho John Wayne worshiping mode, you know, that's a real shame because the female form is something to really be worshipped.
Now your book is not just a philosophical and educational kind of discourse on going to all these different places in the world and learning about their goddesses and their female worship, but there was a personal side for it. When you talk about the whole macho thing, I heard you were very, very clear. Even now, you're saying, well, a 100% hetero man like me, so you still have issues, little mister, you do. But you had even more issues back then.
Well, I won't say that. I think that everybody's got their issues, but we also all have our proclivities. And I've got to say, my proclivities tend to draw me towards the feminine as that which I'm attracted to rather than that which I identify with. But I've spoken with a lot of gay men who really find that they can identify with the goddess in their own worship of the sacred feminine. But, you know, we hetero guys can also worship the goddess.
What you mean by we, white man?
But
I'm also talking about the whole personal story that you went through.
The personal story for me is, you know, here I was really interested in the feminine divine, but I had to say that my own relationships with women really were terrible. I'd been divorced by the time I was in my mid-30s. I had, like, about 4 major relationships with women that all ended in disaster. And when I started writing about the goddess, I realized that what was coming to the surface was my own deep misogyny and difficulties with really honestly accepting a woman into my life as a lover, that I kept wanting a woman but then pushing her away at the same time, and all sorts of commitment issues. And coming to terms with the goddess, with the true divine feminine, helped me see that for what it was, helped me see that behind it was a lot of fear of being too close to the feminine.
Well, where did that come from?
You know, I think that...
Mommy Dearest? Be honest.
Sorry, from what?
From Mommy Dearest?
Yeah, I think that a lot of it comes not from our mothers, and also, in a sense, our mothers in a in a deeper than personal way, because each of us, you know, we took shape inside our mother's body, and when we were little tiny things, there was this all-powerful feminine presence that took care of us. And I think when we grow older, we get really scared that if we fall back under the influence of that feminine presence, then it'll take us over. And a lot of men are afraid of that happening. And they translate that into their relationships with women. And in a sense, recognizing the feminine as divine helps us have a relationship with that divine mother, which then means we don't have to bring that into our relationships with real flesh and blood women. And frankly, and for my own life, it's kind of a relief that I'm no longer imposing that.
Well, you mentioned that in the introduction to the book, and I have read the introduction. I've done that. I'm so busy with my summer reading already that I'm afraid I haven't gotten through the whole book, because I start seeing these long Greek names, and I start thinking about Greek statues and Greek men, and then I have to read a very different book. But, you know, but I did find something interesting, that in these relationships that failed, that tanked, that crashed and burned, you weren't, like, abusive or anything. If anything, you were trying to make the women happy. You were nice to them, or you thought you were being so, and yet that was just making you more pissed off and rage-filled. Is that sort of a true thing?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, I sort of was playing Mr. Nice Guy, but, you know, my, you know, deep inside, the part that was getting resentful, that would come out, and it would end up just sort of lashing out and doing nasty things, you know, cheating on someone. The ways that men can easily destroy a relationship are too numerous.
Oh, please. I've had relationships destroyed between the first cocktail and 4 a.m. Please. But how do you then make your current relationship? You're in love, right? Do you have a wife? Do you have a girlfriend, a boyfriend? You have a wife. So how is this relationship so different? And from your learning about the goddesses.
Yeah. You know, I used to really... it comes right down to two things. One is connection, and that is seeing that you can be connected with a woman, and that takes being honest and truthful and not hiding away who you really are. And before, I think I really wanted a relationship with a woman, but didn't want them to really know me. And with my current, the woman who's now my wife, man, she just really knows me. And you might think that's kind of scary, but when you can really trust the other person, man, it can be beautiful. So that's what I've managed to find with the woman who's now my wife.
And how long have you been married?
We've been married for 3 years, but we've known each other for 10 years. In fact, she came with me on many of the adventures that Savage Breast is all about. And a lot of times I'd be trying to work stuff through with the goddess, and she would really become that goddess for me. She'd become Aphrodite, or she'd become Hecate, the queen of the witches.
Now, wait. Well, now, how would she do this? Was this like a role-play thing? Did this involve handcuffs?
Not exactly, although there was one birthday where she surprised me by dressing up as a Minoan snake goddess, which was pretty extraordinary, I have to tell you.
What does a Minoan snake goddess wear?
She doesn't wear anything from the waist up. I can
Wiggle! Wait, what am I getting excited about? I'm 100% homo.
I don't know. You might want to take a look at that there, Peter. There might be a little bit of the heterosexual lurking deep in your heart.
Oh, God, no! Oh, ew! Ew, I have to wash that off now during the commercial.
It's okay to be erotically attracted to women.
No, it's...
What worshiping the goddess is all about.
No, I worship my own goddess. Ew! Now we have to go get commercial, but we will be right back with more. With Tim Ward, author of Savage, you should pardon the expression, Brass.
Before you go to the box office, before you spend your hard-earned money on a Broadway show, do the research. With theater tickets topping $100, why not invest the time to see if you want to see it? Read Performing Arts Insider, your guide to all of New York theater, with timely listings, reviews, rumors, everything you need to know before you go. Performing Arts Insider. Single issues and subscriptions available from TotalTheater.com or call 516-295-1511. I've been telling you for months why you should use Hewlett Minuteman Press for all your copying and printing needs, but here's one of the owners, Mike Toron, to tell you why.
Hi, how you doing? At Minuteman Press, our ultimate goal is service. We are your best source for the most complete line of printed products. You can check us out on the web at www.hewlett.minutemanpress.com.
Hi, this is Tim Ward. I'm the author of Savage Breast, One Man's Search for the Goddess, and you're listening to me on Dave's Gone By at WGBBAM.
Welcome back, Aru, to Dave's Gone By. I'm Peter Fitzgerald, and I'm the head of WiggleFAR, the Woodmere Gay Liberation Front and Rear, and I am talking to Tim Ward, who is the author of Savage Breast, One Man's Search for the Goddess, which is how he went from being a real macho kind of man who just didn't appreciate women, even though he thought he did, to learning about the goddess in all of us and how powerful and wonderful the feminine is in our world. For example, this is a quote from one of the reviewers. An epic, elegant, scholarly search for the goddess. It weaves together travel, Greek mythology, and personal autobiographic relationships into a remarkable exploration of the Western world's culture and sexual history. It is also entertaining the human as we listen and learn from this accomplished person and the challenging mate he wooed. Now, that was from Harold Schulman, who is professor of gynecology at Winthrop University Hospital. And you know what book he wrote, ladies and gentlemen? Harold Schulman is the author of An Intimate History of the Vagina. Now, I've never read that one, but hopefully I'll be able to experience it for myself when I have that surgery. Helen Node, author of The Ticket Out, called Savage Breast ballsy, entertaining, adventuresome, wild, scholarly, sexy, and deep. Ooh! Ooh, wiggle, wiggle. So, Tim Ward, welcome back. We're talking more to you on Dave's Gone By. So we were hearing about all your personal history and discovering the goddesses for yourself. What are some of the stories that you came across while researching all these different goddesses from history?
Here's one of my favorite ones, Peter. This concerns the goddess Aphrodite, the sexy goddess of love.
Ooh.
And she once fell in love with a mortal man. And she came to this man, his name was Anchises, and as soon as he saw her, he recognized who she was, and he begged her, "Oh, please, Aphrodite," he said, "please go away from me. Don't seduce me."
Ooh.
And she said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I know that if a mortal man makes love with an immortal goddess, he'll never again be able to have sex with a mortal woman."
Oh.
And there's something here to me really worth thinking, and that is that, you know, how typical of a man that he would rather night with Aphrodite, the goddess of love herself, would rather give that up if it means he couldn't, you know, screw everyday run-of-the-mill mortal women after. Now, doesn't that say more about men's preference for quantity over quality than really any woman would want to know?
Well, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Because we've been broaching this whole monogamy issue. You as,
yeah,
as a hetero man and me as a homo man.
Yeah.
And all this goddess stuff, and now you're not cheating on your wife, you've been married 3 years, you've been with the same woman for 10. Is the monogamy part somehow part of appreciating the goddess? Or can goddesses say, "Hey, wait a minute, let's all have sex with everybody, because it can be fun, especially if you're in the right nightclub"?
Well, I think that sex is a gift of the goddess, and one of the ways that you can worship her is through sex, and I think that the goddess doesn't have a moral requirement like, you know, good old Jehovah, that you limit your sexuality for the sake of morality. In other words, sex is not a sin. Sex is a gift, and it's to be enjoyed.
You say it, boy! Ooh! Go,
absolutely,
brother!
Absolutely. Amen. That is my religion.
Wiggle!
Now, in truth, when you find a person who you know deeply, intimately, there is so much joy in just sharing your depths with that one person. Frankly, okay, I'm now a man in my mid-40s, and I don't have anything I want to spare for anybody else. I need to save it all for the woman I really, truly love. And I am so happy with that. But I don't think that the goddess has set out a rule that people ought to be one way or the other way. But what I do think is that sex is something that is deeply spiritual. It's something that can go right to your very depths and make you, you know, make your soul shudder. And that's something that really needs to be honored and not wasted. And a lot of time, especially in North America, we tend to have sex like we have a bag of Doritos. And
I want that bag, let me tell you.
Yeah. But, you know,
it must be the extra spicy nacho.
Yeah. Right. The question is, can you have it in such a way that it's a beautiful thing and that, that your life is richer, deeper, more beautiful because you've got that in it? And, you know, that's something that, that we each get to play with on our own terms. I'm just so happy that the terms that I have involve really doing it with this woman I love, you know, right to the right down to my toes.
Oh, that's so sweet. I could almost throw up. No, no, I can't.
Well, Peter, you know, the one of the things that I found most difficult to get about the goddess is that the goddess, particularly Aphrodite, the erotic goddess.
Oh, yes.
She's the one who made men.
She made a lot of men, if you know what I'm saying.
She made men because one of her nicknames was Philomenides, which means means fond of a man's genitals, but it also means owner of a man's genitals.
Boner of a man's
owner of a man's
owner.
Genitals.
Oh,
and if you
sorry.
Look at Aphrodite, you often see her worshipped in the form of a column or a phallic meteorite, and she's, you know, connected so much to phallus. I wondered, why is that? And the truth of the matter is, Aphrodite created sex. Why? Because sex is the way you mix up DNA and you get stronger, more diverse organisms as a result. If you didn't need to mix DNA, if you only had a single gender that budded or cloned itself,
yeah,
you could do that, and that one gender would be women. So when Aphrodite created two genders in order to make sex, the gender she created with the extra gender was man.
Wow. I thought the extra gender was Beatrice Arthur.
You know what that means? That means we were created for one purpose. And what's that purpose? To have sex. Okay, now Aphrodite would say to have sex with women, but hey, there's enough of us that we can have sex with men if that's the way we're made.
That's the way I'm made.
Absolutely. So, you know, but, you know, the fact of the matter is the male gender exists because of sex.
Oh, I like that explanation. Let me ask you before you have to leave us, Tim.
Yeah.
This whole big thing now, because there's a movie coming out and a big important book called The Da Vinci Code. Now,
yeah.
I haven't read the book. I don't even like Leonardo da Vinci's paintings very much. But what does that have to do with anything? And yet you're trying to tie all this in with your book, The Savage Breast, in with the Da Vinci Code. What?
The whole story about the Da Vinci Code is tracing this bloodline, supposedly, of Mary Magdalene and Jesus who had a baby. But this was all covered up with the church because the church wanted to cut the sacred feminine out of Christianity and out of the religions that preceded Christianity. So they made Jesus a celibate guy who didn't have sex with anybody, and they made the religion one of Jesus and his 12 apostles a male-only thing. They cut the sacred feminine right out of the religion. But if you look beyond that to where my book looks, you can see that the goddess permeated all of life. And the story of the Da Vinci Code is hearkening back to those ancient goddess religions. The main character, this art historian who's trying to solve all this mystery, he's written a book in the novel on goddess symbols in the early church.
Oh.
So the goddess is right at the root of all of this. And I think the reason this book has really caught on and become so such a fascinating story for people is because it does tie us back to the sacred feminine and what this earlier religion gave us that modern religion, with its focus on the Father and the Son, does not. I should tell you one more thing about Leonardo that you, Peter, really ought to know and be interested in.
Tell me.
And that is that Leonardo, quite possibly, was, if not bi, was quite likely gay.
I knew it! Wiggle! I've got to reevaluate all his paintings.
You better go back and look at all those paintings again.
Every picture of a banana, I'm going to look real close.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Some beautiful, beautiful drawings of John the Baptist.
Hmm. Circumcised or un? I don't recall.
I don't think that Leonardo's paintings went into quite that detail with John the Baptist, but he'd probably be circumcised if you needed to know the truth. He was Jewish, after all.
Yes, that's true. Nice Jewish boy. Well, not so nice Jewish boy. Oh, well. I wouldn't date him. I have higher standards, if you know what I'm saying. By the way,
yes.
This being Mother's Day, happy Mother's Day to... Do you have kids?
I do, Peter. I've got a son.
Oh, by your current, shall we say, in a very loving and blessed way, ho?
By my sainted and beloved ex-wife with whom I had a terrible relationship, and out of that terrible relationship came this most wonderful boy.
Oh, well, happy Mother's Day to that mother, of course. How is your relationship now with the mother that you obviously had so much rage and hatred against? Did you do your jail time?
Yeah. It's really great, you know, and I think that being able to work through all the issues that I've had with women has actually helped me be much more relaxed with my own mom. And, you know, I'm at a point now, she must be, she's in her early 70s now, and I just really love and adore her so much, and it's great to, you know, spend, you know, time with her. I see her 3 or 4 times a year, and I just think that so many men end up having to sort of feel this sort of strange worship towards their mother, which means they don't ever really get to the point where they can experience the rage and hatred towards mom, which needs to come to the surface for them to be free of it and clean of it.
Oh, I can't be with my mother for more than 3 minutes without the rage exploding. Please.
Oh, you know, I'll bet you're right.
All over Florida.
And I'll bet you there's so many men for whom that's the same thing, but it's so taboo to say something bad against your mom. But the men end up really trapped. And I think that one of the wonderful things about seeing the feminine face of the divine is she can take all that rage. The divine can handle our true feelings, and when we can express them towards the divine, then our actual relationships with real women, whether our mothers or our lovers or our daughters or women at work, it gets cleaner and more relaxed. And we can see them as real people, not as iconic goddesses that we have these old emotions towards.
So I think what you're saying, Tim Ward, is that we should be able to go to our mothers and our wives and our girlfriends and grandmothers and all that and say, "You awful, hateful bitches! Oh, shame on you! How you've ruined us! How you've made us!" And this will be healthy.
No, Peter.
I've missed the boat again.
But what I do think is I think we should look at the faces of the feminine divine that our ancestors have left us, and we should feel the emotions that are buried in us there and bring them to the surface and realize that often the anger we bear towards women isn't towards this or that particular woman, but is towards the fact that we have been cut off from the love of the goddess, the need for the feminine has been denied to us for so many years, and that when we recover that on the spiritual plane, we find there's much less trauma in our actual relationships with real women. And those real women, they don't exist
to
torment us or to give us pleasure. They're just people we share the planet with. And we should just love them as human beings, not as spiritual figures in disguise.
Well, this is Tim Ward talking about the feminine, the divine goddess, and what we should be allowing back into our world, our social world, our spiritual world. It shouldn't be all men, alas. We need to allow the feminine in. And if you want to read more about this, please, please get a copy of Tim Ward's book, Savage Breast. Now, where can they get this, Tim?
Peter, it's in bookstores everywhere right now. You can also, of course, get it on online at Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. So pretty much any bookstore. And, you know, particularly for any of your listeners out there, Peter, who are women who think, man, I wish, you know, I could get, you know, the man in my life to deal with these issues of women and commitment and this rage that so many men have, I say, women, please go do your man a favor. Buy him a copy of this book for Mother's Day.
Or Father's Day. It's a perfect Father's Day gift.
And, Peter, you know, I would just like to finally say for you, I hope that this Mother's Day you go to that sweet woman who gave birth to you and you just tell her how much you love her.
Well, I'll even put some flowers on her grave. I kid. She's still alive, but I bought the grave a couple of years ago, just in the hopes that soon, but she just hangs on. My issues, I'll deal with them, but Tim, you've been wonderful, you've been adorable. I thank you so much for talking about your book. I wish you best. Are you working on another book?
I am, dear. I'm working on a book about the goddess Athena right now, and how men and women in the workplace can really learn from her.
Well, best of luck on that and all your travels and with your family and everything. Thank you so much for
you're
being...
Welcome, Peter. Oh, Peter, if you've got a second, do you mind if I tell your listeners my website in case they want to visit me?
God, you're endless. I tried to end this twice already. Well, go ahead.
It is
www.savagebreastbook.com. www.savagebreastbook.com.
That's right.
Anything else? Are you pushing any Romeo tillers or anything?
A wonderful Mother's Day. Pick some flowers. Give them to the woman you love.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tim. You've been great.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
What do the letters DFSX stand for? They stand for Dave's Gone By, that's what, because DFSXRadio.com is rebroadcasting vintage episodes of Dave's Gone By every Thursday night at 8 and 11 Eastern Time. So you hear me on GBB and then listen to me on DFSXRadio.com every Thursday night at 8 and 11. It's all the Dave you could ever want, kinda. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. Dave goes off. And Dave goes off indeed. Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening on this Mother's Day program to Dave's Gone By. Thank you to Peter Fitzgerald for that delightful interview with Tim Ward about his book, Savage Breast. And got some things to get off of my breast. Well, yeah, I guess it is. Men have a breast. They don't have two of them. Although, you know, if they get kind of chunky and porky, it sort of looks like it. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's go towards a couple of things I just wanted to mention about this week in this Dave Goes Off segment. First of all, I live on the South Shore in a really kind of ultra-normal suburban town. It's gotten a little more urbanized over the past decade or so. It was a little more rural-ish when my family first moved there in the mid-70s, and over the years, because of just the expense or the problems of living in Manhattan, people gravitated towards suburbia, towards Long Island, and towards the South Shore where I'm at, because it's still a reasonable, close-ish distance for commuting. So it's got the usual stores, and it's still got a neighborhoody feel, but with a little element of the urban to it. So, yes, we've got the supermarket two blocks away, and yes, there's a Starbucks and a Lowman's and Hewlett Minuteman Press, of all things, and that whole kind of feeling, and the regular little stores, plus some of the big stores, and a shopping mall just 2 miles down the road in Valley Stream. So, it is not the kind of place, or I guess in modern America, maybe it is, that you expect to be cordoned off for a bomb scare. But that's what happened about 4 or 5 days ago in the middle of the week. I was home and my wife was heading off to the gym, and what do you know, but there was suddenly about 10 o'clock in the morning in our town, police, like cars everywhere, and they ended up cordoning off a whole quarter mile range going from about West Broadway, if people know where that is, over towards halfway down Broadway, going towards Woodmere. So, and my wife, of course, being inquisitive and wondering how the heck she was going to get to where she needed to get to, asked one of the policemen and said, what's going on? He said, well, I can't say, but you'll see it on the news tonight. Which is really, you know, really kind of nice. Like, having a policeman probably understandably not wanting to cause a panic, but also being a little bit snide. Like, if it's okay to tell on the news, what is, does News 12 have an exclusive on it that you can't tell the residents who live in that town? Oh, there might be a problem. Oh, there's a reason that you can't walk past this part of town towards another part of town because, oh, I don't know, something may blow up and kill everybody. That's apparently what it was. There was a pipe bomb, apparently, in Roslyn Savings Bank, or put near the Roslyn Savings Bank, and I'm not even sure if it was a real bomb, but it certainly was made up to look like one, whether or not it had a charge in it, or it was meant to actually go off. And my wife says that there's something about that bank that's kind of goofy and kind of odd. I mean, not that we've ever been in it or have dealings with it, but it's just the fact that apparently someone got robbed there a year or two ago, and gunpoint kind of robbed, which is, again, something that really, thank God, doesn't happen much in our neighborhood, even in the fact that we have four gas stations near where we live on the corners. And those are the kinds of things that get held up, especially now that gas stations are holding everybody up. But it's weird to have this kind of tension. And the first thought that we also had was, well, they locked down the schools, it's just about finals time in the local high school. Some kid, there's always the fire drill, pardon me, there's always the prank this time of year where the kid either it's summer and they don't want to be in class that day, so someone pulls the thing, or worse, they're not ready for the final, so they figure, ah, they can get out of it by, you know, wrecking the day, and they've got to do whatever they were doing in school that day on another time. But no, this had nothing to do with that. They locked down the school because of, apparently, a bomb in the Roswell lot, which the police, this is kind of funny, they brought the bomb to detonate it to the Burger King parking lot. So apparently it was okay to move, and then for some reason they couldn't just leave it where it was, because God forbid they could blow up a bank. But they figured, oh, we blow up a Burger King, there's about 4 million others of them. And that's, apparently was a big bang. I didn't see it. I don't think I even heard it. And I don't know if it was a real bomb or not, but they made sure to blow it up before it blew up. But I think the really funny kind of part about the whole thing is the policeman saying to my wife, oh, well, you know, I can't really talk about it, but yeah, you'll watch it on the news tonight. So, wife calls me on the cell phone, tells me what's going on, and she's like, okay, put on News 12, let's see what's going on. So I put on News 12 about 10:30 in the morning, and I'm like waiting, and waiting. And the top story has to do with, like, the Stony Brook students who were held up at gunpoint, which was kind of frightening. And then they had some other stuff, I think, about gas prices and tax issues, and then they're doing, oh, so I wait until 11. I figure, okay, 11 o'clock, if nothing else, if they don't have cameras there, they're going to mention it, at least. But no, nothing. Not until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, then you first just start seeing at the bottom of the screen a little crawl that says, bomb threat in Hewlett, lockdown for a couple of hours, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, hello? Because the funny part is, this isn't like NBC, this isn't MSNBC, or WINS New York Radio. This is supposed to be Long Island, up-to-the-minute news in your town. That's their thing. As local newscasts. Well, I was local, and I know that Cablevision, which owns and runs News 12, I think, has studios and stuff just in Lynbrook, New York, which is about 2 miles away. And in moderate traffic, you can go from my town to Lynbrook in less than 10 minutes. In heavy traffic, let's say under a bomb scare, it still should not take you more than a half an hour to bring your cameras and your reporter or two from Lynbrook to Hewlett. And let's say you weren't coming from, let's say I actually come from Mineola or some other place where the actual Cablevision, all their real big studios are, where they have all their pet shows and where the news comes out of. Does it really take 5 to 7 hours to cover a lockdown bomb threat story once it's all over? You know, imagine, God, you know, I hate to bring up 9/11, but just think how different it would have been had the planes gone into the towers, the things fell down, and then 6 hours later, CBS minicams show up, and the little vans show up from Fox 5, and they just get rubble. I mean, actually, probably would have gotten over 9/11 a little bit quicker. America would have just sort of looked at it after the event and said, wow, that was horrible, and maybe moved on quicker. Alas, that's just the way we are. But it was the fact that when after that first plane hit, they had the cameras on it, and then boom, it was every TV station caught plane number two. Meanwhile, in Hewlett, it was just like the bomb thing. They sure the police are there. They're standing around. People are being the shop owners can't get out of their shops. The kids can't get out of school for lunch. And it's like News 12 is like, you know, your pet and you. Hey, where are you doing your wedding? So, I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to lead that into also something about bombs and explosive devices under the heading, why did it take 5,000 years to dot, 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 to think of this? Now, Reuters, according to the Reuters News Service, they say that the government is I think this is the government of China, actually. The government is training rats to locate explosive devices planted by leftist rebels. Lola the rat has a 90% success record in locating explosives in her training maze. Now, I find this kind of funny because, you know, it's not quite the real world. If it's a maze and you have two directions to go, or maybe three, the chances of finding the bomb as opposed to the piece of cheese are, well, they're kind of 1 in 3, rather than 1 in, say, 1,200 million. But anyway, police animal trainers are tired of seeing their explosive-sniffing dogs blown up by stepping on mines, so that they're hoping that the white-furred, pink-eyed creatures, says Reuters, will go through upcoming open field tests, and then they'll go into the Andes country's live mine, well, maybe, it's, I don't know, where, probably Colombia, I think this is where it is. The mice will go into the live minefields of the Andes before the end of the year. Now, at about 7.8 ounces, Lola the rat is too light to actually detonate landmines that gorillas are using to protect their cocaine crops. So, you know, it takes about 14 ounces, or two mice, to detonate a mine. However, the dogs are heavy enough to set off the explosion, sometimes killing officers nearby. Now, first of all, how dumb do you have to be standing close enough to a bomb-sniffing dog in a minefield? Isn't that the purpose of having the dog go into the minefield and doing the blowing up for you? If the dog's there, you stand very, very far away. And if you suddenly hear, boom, well, he's found the mine. You don't need to be following after him a few feet to say, good boy, and expect to feed him if he actually finds what he's looking for. So, I mean, and also, it's kind of an awful way for, like, the agent to die. You know, how was he killed? Well, he was torn to bits by flying Weimaraner. I blew that joke. He was torn to pieces by flying bits of Weimaraner. I knew I should have picked another word besides Weimaraner to do that joke. Well, loud mines, apparently, according to Reuters, have killed or maimed more than 1,000 Colombians in 2005 alone. 60% of the victims are members of state security, but the other 40% are civilians. About half of them are children who step on the devices while walking to school or playing in the countryside. So in training animals to sniff out these bombs, police have discovered that it takes about 6 months to train mine-sniffing dogs. But rats learn in only half that time. Police Colonel Javier Cifuentes says, rats are much smarter than the dogs. So, and up until now, it looks like the female rats are smarter than the males. But I want to, you know, just mention that who is really smarter here? Think about it. The animal who learns quickly to run into a field and jump on top of a bomb that's going to blow it to pieces? Or the animal that kind of says, you know, I think there are better ways to spend my afternoon than doing that. I think dogs are just getting wiser. They're saying, I'm not going out there. Let the rats do it. And the next phase of training are going to present new challenges to the rats because they're going to have distractions in the open. It's not going to be like a maze. For example, they're going to have to keep the males away from Lola, who appears to attract them physically. You know, isn't that just like women? We have this all feminist thing, but I'm going to turn it around a little bit. Like, Lola starts out on her little journey. She meets this male rat who wants to get a piece of her tail. And she's like, ooh, you know, there's this big old piece of cheese lying halfway out in that field, and I'm so hungry. Could you run and get that for me? Oh, you can't miss it. It's right by that tripwire and that balloon-shaped thing that says Bomba on it. Well, anyway, I just wonder about this whole rat thing, Skir. But I guess if you... I wonder why you would train rats to do that, come to think of it. If you just send out, like, 1,000 rats into a field, and a few hundred scurry forward and set off some bombs, wouldn't that save you about 3 or 6 months of training to begin with? I don't know. Anyway, I want to end this part of Dave Goes Off with something that really belongs more in News Gone By, but gotta mention it anyway. The makers of Stilton cheese, which is one of the stinkier, veinier cheeses out there, are now creating a perfume with the smell of Stilton cheese. And I'm not kidding. This is according to the international news service AFP. England's Stilton Cheesemakers Association plans to introduce Eau de Stilton early next year. The company calls the smell, quote, earthy and fruity, kind of like Peter Fitzgerald. And they say the cheese gets a bad rap, and it's lumped in with Limburger and the like, but one female employee said, quote, I've had the perfume on all day, and none of the men complained. Sorry, ma'am, you know, if only They would make perfumes that smell, for me, like fresh ground coffee, or even coffee grounds, hazelnut a little bit, right? Or except like old coffee grounds, when you can go into a place and they make cups and cups and cups of coffee, that starts to smell like body odor. But I'm talking about the fresh, good coffee stuff. Or spare ribs. A spare rib perfume, then I am totally on board. But otherwise, let's keep our stinks to ourselves, especially the cheesy ones. Well, we'll be right back to, let's see, can I think of a cheese pun? No, e-dammit, I can't. Back after this. If I were a rich man, I could do the Dave's Gone By show for years and years and never have to worry about money. But that's not the way things have worked out. So, I need your help. You can help me by helping yourself by advertising or sponsoring segments on Dave's Gone By. It's easy, it's cheap. Just go to davesgoneby.com and see the rate card, davesgoneby.com, and bring your message to my listeners and make us both rich. Big, tall
house with the room. M is for the miracle of birth. O is for the ovum growing free. T is for the trouble that I caused her. H is for the hysterectomy 6 months later. E is for episiotomy scars. R is for 3 months in a recovery room. Put them all together, they spell mother. The only girl to want me in her womb.
Hi, this is Tim Ward. I'm the author of Savage Breasts, One Man's Search for the Goddess, and a guest on Dave's Gone By. I want to let you know I'm going to be giving a public talk in New York City on May the 19th at 7 p.m. at the New York Open Center. That's on 83 Spring Street. The contact information is 212-219-2527, and their website's www.opencenter.org. I'll be showing slides of goddesses and talking about my new book, Adventures with Goddesses.
Adventures with Goddesses, indeed, and also Tim Ward is the author of Savage Breast, and you can find out more about it at savagebreastbook.com. Thank you so much to Tim Ward for being on Dave's Gone By tonight. Thank you also to the wonderful Peter Fitzgerald for interviewing him. Let's see some other thank yous. I want to thank my beloved and terrific wife, Joyce. She was just on the air before the show went on to talk about our weekend and to say lovely things about her mom. And her mom was terrific. We all had lunch this afternoon, a nice Mother's Day Chinese meal. We had made the reservations at a local restaurant. We made them about 2 weeks ago, and I think it was a little bit early because we wanted to get there a little after noon so I could get out on Long Island in time to get to the radio station. And wouldn't you know, we walk in there, our reservation's ready, we walk in and they say, you know, the cook isn't even here yet. So I have visions in my head of great, ruining Mother's Day for everybody by not checking with the restaurant the second time to make sure, well, you know, if it is lunchtime, how come you don't even have your chefs in there when people would normally be eating lunch? But luckily enough, we went a mile down the road into Cedarhurst to a kosher Chinese place that was absolutely delicious, and it worked out great. And it was wonderful to see my mother-in-law and love her very much. And also I want to wish love to some other moms in my life, my Aunt Bonnie, my Aunt Esther, and of course my own beloved and wonderful mom, Brenda. So love to all of you. And my thanks to, as I said, my beloved wife Joyce, who played mom to our dogs this week. They had some tooth problems and thought that maybe they might have one or two teeth out. Well, one dog just got away with a cleaning and a scaling, but the other one had to have four teeth out because dachshunds have very thin and narrow mouths, and the teeth tend to be crowded in the back, and they're prone, the breed is prone to tooth decay. So when we got the dogs back from the vet that day, he had four teeth out, which meant, you know, like I mash up his food for a week and give him antibiotics, and for the most part, my wife Joyce took care of a lot of that and watched over them, as she always does. You know, she's more of the mother to them. So happy Mother's Day to the dogs, and also the frogs and the potatoes, to my beloved wife, Joyce. And thank you, by the way, to Dr. B for doing such a nice job on our dog's teeth. Wonderful, wonderful. And congratulations, speaking of Mother's Day, to a new mother, to someone who has been on this program, Marina Balika. She's one of the members of October Project, that terrific pop band. Hopefully this year they're going to get their new album out. So, that's the front doorbell, which I cannot get for another minute or two. Sorry, you'll just have to wait. So Marina Balika is the mom of twins on May 1st, Benjamin and Serena. So hearty, hearty congratulations to her from us. And hopefully we'll have October Project on sometime this year when they're ready to push their new album. Well, I do have to run. It's 11:59 on this Mother's Day. We will be back next week, May 21st, for the 173rd episode of Dave's Gone By. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Mom's the word, and gone by.
Motherly love. Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and motherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. The mother's got love that'll drive you mad. They're raving about the way we do. No need to feel lonely, no need to feel sad. If we ever get a hold on you, what you need is motherly love.
Come on, get it now.
Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and motherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. Nature's been good to this here band. Don't ever think we're shy. Send us up some little groupies and we'll take their hands and rock them till they sweat and cry. What you need is motherly love.
Get it now.
Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly or motherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do. We can love you till you have a heart attack. You best believe that's true. We'll bite your neck and scratch your back till you don't know what to do.
What you need is
motherly love. Motherly love. Forget about the brotherly and otherly love. Motherly love is just a thing for you. You know your mother's gonna love you till you don't know what to do.
You know I got little motherly love for you, babe. You know I got a little motherly love, yeah, honey.